WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. A white supremacist from Florida is expected to plead guilty to making racist threats against Charlottesville activists. Beginning Friday, elective surgeries and non-emergency dental procedures may resume in Virginia. And Friday is the 1st of May, and we'll have a report on how landlords and tenants are dealing with paying or not paying rent during the economic shutdown. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, April 30th. A white man charged with making racist online threats against a black activist in Virginia is expected to plead guilty today, according to court records and federal prosecutors. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Virginia said Daniel McMahon is expected to enter a guilty plea during a hearing by video conference. That hearing was postponed by the COVID-19 pandemic. McMahon from Florida was charged last August with posting social media messages intended to intimidate activist Don Gathers and interfere with Gathers' plans to run for a seat on Charlottesville's city council. An indictment says McMahon, who was 31 at the time of his arrest, expressed white supremacist views on his social media accounts. Others have accused McMahon of bombarding them with hateful, threatening messages using online aliases. There are now almost 15,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Virginia, but the actual number of infections may be much higher because of limited testing. Those cases include 411 in the city of Harrisonburg alone, which remains one of the most concentrated places of confirmed cases of the disease in Virginia. At Accordius Long-Term Care Facility in Harrisonburg, dozens of residents have contracted the disease and at least 21 have died there. That is an increase of 8 deaths in less than 1 week. A total of 522 people in the Commonwealth have died from the disease. That is the equivalent of losing the entire population of the town of Ivy. Elective surgeries and non-emergency dental procedures will soon be allowed to resume in Virginia. Governor Ralph Northam's original order prohibiting them expires Friday. Virginia Public Radio's Nick Gilmore reports.
During a news conference Wednesday, Governor Northam recounted where the state was in the fight against COVID-19 several weeks ago.
Our case counts and hospitalization rates were rising. We were worried that our hospitals would be overwhelmed by a surge in cases like we were seeing in Italy and in New York. We were planning at that time how to build alternative care facilities.
But things are different now. Hospitals weren't overwhelmed, the state has acquired adequate amounts of personal protective equipment, and testing capabilities have increased. That's what prompted the governor's decision to allow elective procedures to resume. He said that while those surgeries aren't always emergencies, they are important, and people shouldn't feel the need to delay necessary care.
Elective surgeries include everything from knee replacements to some cancer treatments. These are procedures that can wait a while, but certainly not forever.
However, if the state faces another potential surge in cases in the future, Northam said he's prepared to restrict elective surgeries again. I'm Nick Gilmore.
Health officials in Virginia have been pressed to share more COVID-19 case information since the pandemic began. During that news conference on Wednesday, Governor Northam said the Commonwealth will soon be able to fulfill one of the more prominent requests.
And so I'm pleased to report that from here on, data will be reported via zip code.
The Virginia Department of Health is working to make that a reality, but it will take a few days for that information to be included in the department's daily updates. Health officials are expected to provide more details on Virginia's testing efforts on Friday. Black and Hispanic people are getting hit harder by the pandemic in Virginia, as is the case elsewhere. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
3 weeks ago, Governor Ralph Northam asked healthcare providers to start collecting more data about the race of people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19. Now we've got a better idea about the racial inequities here in Virginia. Alexandria Health Director Stephen Herring says African Americans are being hospitalized at higher rates based on a number of factors.
The virus itself doesn't discriminate, but the impact it has on people does, according to their income, type of job, whether they have a job or not, whether the job has sick benefits. For instance, if you're ill, can you take off and still get paid?
Freddie Mejia at the Commonwealth Institute says he's concerned the Hispanic population makes up about 20% of the population in Fairfax County, but more than 50% of the COVID-19 cases there.
There's some real concerns around, are we really reaching the communities that we need to, how this data is being reported, and what the state could do better in order to show these really important discrepancies and inequities in COVID outcomes.
Some states are releasing localized case numbers by zip code, but so far, Virginia is declining to release that level of detail, and about a third of the cases reported to the Virginia Department of Health don't include any information about race. Michael Pope.
Time now for the latest installment of our series from Virginia Public Radio, answering listener questions about COVID-19.
This is the COVID-19 Minute, expert answers to your questions. Listener Spot et al. Notes that the new coronavirus is thought to have come from a bat, and he wonders how often diseases spread from animals to people. We put the question to Dr. Gonzalo Behrman, an infectious disease expert at Virginia Commonwealth University.
The frequency with which new zoonotic diseases are appearing is not entirely clear, but there is concern that as human habitats expand into areas that were previously uninhabited, we could have an increase in zoonotic infections.
Christina Gleixner asks whether autoimmune diseases put people at increased risk for COVID.
Patients who have underlying conditions which will impair their immune system, things like rheumatoid arthritis for which they take medication to decrease the robustness of their immune system, they are potentially at greater risk of infection.
Ironically, rheumatoid arthritis can be treated with hydroxychloroquine, a medication touted by President Trump as a promising therapy for COVID-19. But the FDA now warns against its use outside of a hospital or clinical trial because it can cause serious heart rhythm problems. Gary Westmoreland asks when widespread testing for COVID-19 will become an option in Virginia. At VCU's Medical Center, Behrman says soon.
When this started 6+ weeks ago, we were able to do roughly 30 tests a day. Now we're up in the hundreds, 400 plus. So I would imagine now that within the next 4 to 8 weeks, there will be near universal access to testing for those that need it in Virginia.
I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
Finally today, when April the 1st came around, many Virginians were not able to make rent after being laid off in the wake of the pandemic. Tomorrow is May 1st, and the problem is set to repeat itself. Jed Khalil from Virginia Public Radio has this report on how landlords and tenants are dealing with paying or not paying rent.
Late this March, tenants and landlords started sending letters.
Yeah, we knew that April 1st was going to be coming and rent was going to be due. Knowing that people were losing their jobs or getting reduced hours, we knew that some people were going to have a hard time paying their rent.
Andrew Chisholm helps manage thousands of rental units across Virginia and the country for Drucker and Falk. Trade groups had encouraged property managers to reach out to tenants to remind them that they could work out a payment plan if they couldn't pay rent. Some companies didn't, but Chisholm's did.
Anytime we can get ahead of things and, you know, have those conversations with people in advance and understand their circumstances. Unfortunately, in some cases, individuals just don't communicate until it's too late.
By April 12th, only 84% of rent payments were made, according to the National Multifamily Housing Council. Chisholm's company's payments were down by less than he expected, but he's still nervous about May. One renter that contacted her landlord was Zoe Brzezinski.
My name is Zoe Brzezinski, and I live in Northside, Richmond, Virginia, and I have for the past 7 or 8 years.
Zoe was working as a cook, but she was laid off. Her roommate got laid off, too. A few days before April rent was due, Brzezinski called their landlord to describe their circumstances.
I called him about it, and it just didn't seem like he cared. And I was like, yeah, we both lost our job. We're waiting on our unemployment checks. He was just like, oh, well, we'll see what the courts say.
The courts probably won't say anything until May 17th. That's when a judicial emergency is set to expire. Until then, courts aren't processing evictions. And since you need a court order to be evicted, it's essentially a freeze on most evictions. In the meantime, housing activists in Richmond are organizing.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I see all the homies coming in.
This is an online forum for a group of activists organizing a rent strike.
So tonight, Richmond's housing organizers will be answering all your questions around rent strikes, evictions, and what folks are doing around the city who can't pay rent.
They're providing tenants with resources for researching their landlords and a framework for networking with other tenants. Then those networks decide together if they want to negotiate collectively for lower rents or rent freezes. Letting people know they can organize is hard with social distancing in place, but they've held parades of cars honking horns to bring attention to their efforts. One of those participating in the rent strike is this person.
Hi, I'm Marie, and I'm one of an autonomous collective that are advocating for a rent strike in Richmond.
Marie didn't give their last name. They were worried their landlord would retaliate against them for speaking to the media.
I've got some bits that I can read out.
Marie sent their landlord a letter, too.
Our tenant council is contacting you today to address April rent. We believe that the unique challenges that COVID-19 poses, it is in our best interest to protect all tenants, regardless of income, and we'll be communicating with your office only as a collective unit. Thank you. Signed, our council.
Even if they are able to stay in their homes without paying rent, renters like Brzezinski, the cook in Northside, foresee the issue of finding new housing once their lease is up.
If any landlord hears about the situation that I'm going through right now, they might be reluctant to sign a lease with me because, you know, I don't really have a job right now and I didn't end my last lease in a very agreeable way.
April was the first month for rent problems in the age of COVID-19, but with several weeks left in stay-at-home orders, the fallout from housing is set to continue. Brzezinski scraped together enough to pay rent for April, but she's mentally preparing to start looking for a new place to live. I'm Jack Khalil.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.